Welcome, everybody, to All About Symbian Insight podcast number 174. As with last week, it's just Rafe and myself starting off. We may be joined by some gnomes or elves at some point. So I'm Steve Litchfield, and with me in Sussex I have...
Rafe Blanford. Hello, everybody.
Yes, loads to get through again, including some hardware reviews, but breaking news, as we record this, Nokia has just released Obi Maps, or I should say Nokia Maps for mobile. They have started their renaming system. 3.8, it's in beta. It's for all Symbian 3 phones, and Rafe's been taking it for a spin round the back roads and A-roads of Sussex, haven't you?
I have indeed. Yes, this is available through Beta Lab, so the usual warnings about beta software apply. But really, the big updates in this all relate to the drive functionality. There has been another update to what most people have on their phone, which is 3.6, which was 3.7, which we talked about a while back, and that made everything modular. And one of the things was that had kind of a separate drive mode function. So this drive mode has actually received a lot of attention in 3.8 or Service Release 8 or 3.08, however you want to term it. So yes, it's all about the drive functionality. I think really the big ticket item here is the incorporation of live traffic information into the routing. Now, Obi Maps has had traffic information since version 3, you know, before it actually went free when you had to pay an add-on subscription for it. But it was only of a limited use in terms of rerouting while you're actually driving. What's happening now, from the testing I've done at least, it seems that it will take into account live traffic information when it's doing the routing and will dynamically do some rerouting as you go along if you choose to turn that option off. It is an option that you can turn on and off in settings.
Just to be clear, Rafe, so the previous versions would take into account traffic information at the time of route calculation and would then stick to the route, whereas now it dynamically alters it as you go.
I mean, I'm not even sure it necessarily was that sophisticated. It was more the case that you could get traffic information displaying in the map, and that there was an offer when you had it particularly bad to reroute you, and you could either set that to happen manually or automatically. When using Obi Maps over the last couple of years, I've never actually had an instance that I can remember where that sort of thing happened. I think what we've got now is it's better integrated, and so you're far more likely to come across an instance where you do have this traffic information having an impact, and it's not something you're going to have to manually put in either. It will happen automatically once you change this setting over.
I can sense All About Symbian funding a special Obi Maps 3.8 road trip around Greater London to test this out.
Yes, I think that's probably true. I mean, I haven't tried this out for real because I couldn't come across a traffic jam in the right amount of time. But what I will say is that the traffic information does seem to be more widespread now in terms of the UK usage. It's all over the trunk roads, and including some of my local A roads, and I was able to get an example, which you can see on the site, of a different route to what you'd normally have under kind of standard conditions, if you will. It's worth pointing out that this is restricted to the UK, France, Germany, US and Russia, so it's not available everywhere, but I'm pretty sure they will extend the range of it, just as they have done for the other portions of the Obi service.
Presumably, Rafe, they take traffic information for each country from different services. Do we know what the UK's source of information is?
I'm not sure offhand what the UK source of information is. I think it's something like ITIS. I did have a conversation with the team about this, and they said one of the problems is, of course, that they get it in different formats. And Navtech, actually, which is, of course, the source of the map data, also provide traffic data, and some of that's coming in from Navtech. But Obi Maps has certainly looked to widen the sources of that. And yes, it is different for every country, which is why you get this, you know, specific patterns and specific coverage in different countries. They do use a standardized format for it, and hence they can build it into the application, but it's a far from straightforward thing to do, and so, you know, this is why we haven't seen it, I think, you know, come to prominence before this point in time. But it, you know, I do want to go and test it, but from the look I've seen of it so far, it does seem to be working well and is obviously a welcome addition, because, you know, GPS routing is all very well, but you know, you live in the real world where there are delays, there's traffic jams, and to kind of have that optimal routing, that optimal time calculation, you need to take account of that. And that's something that humans can often do automatically without thinking about. Of course, it's far more difficult for a computer to do that, even with the sort of traffic information available. So we'd be interested in hearing anyone who does try that out, what kind of experience they have and whether it improves travel times for them.
And on this one, some of the lower end devices like the C601, I mean, that's just a stonkingly good value smartphone now, given that it's also a real-time traffic-aware sat-nav as well as being a full hardware-accelerated smartphone.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in awe, really, of the sophistication of Ovi Maps in many ways. I mean, this is something that really is Nokia's crown jewel in its kind of service portfolio, if you like. And I think it's quite easy to argue that Ovi Maps is the most sophisticated. Now, it does depend what country you're in and what kind of use cases you have. But in a very general sense, Ovi Maps, I think, is significantly ahead of its closest competition, which is, of course, Google Maps. There are some third-party products on the market. Copilot in particular is pretty strong, but they do obviously have a commercial price attached to them where you're getting this free and built into every Nokia handset. And although this particular version is only for Symbian 3 devices, I think it may trickle down to Symbian 1 devices in due course. And of course, it's going to apply going forward to the Series 40 devices, future Symbian devices, Windows Phone devices. And we said, you know, when the kind of Ovi Maps going free thing happened, that we thought this would be a differentiator. And if you look at some of Nokia's competitors, they haven't really been able to come up as something matching this. And so I think it's very much an understated, sort of underestimated advantage for having a Nokia phone.
Yes, it would be nice to see this getting more recognition actually in the mainstream press, rather than them taking every opportunity to slam Nokia for the things Nokia and Symbian haven't got, when in actual fact there is some really killer applications and killer core modules that just are underappreciated, full stop.
Absolutely. And I think the other thing about Ovi Maps is, you know, Symbian's often been criticized for the UI, but they have worked quite hard at sort of improving the user experience. And, you know, I'm always in two minds about switching away from kind of standard UI patterns, you know, that you're used to using on a platform. But I think the Maps team in Nokia have actually done that pretty successfully. And much of the time, they're actually looking ahead to what's coming next in terms of what the platform's going to look like. And actually, the same is true here. I mean, the other big update, really, in this 3.08, particularly with regards, as I say, to the drive module, is there's sort of a new looking UI. That's things like extra information displayed when you're in drive mode, an easier ability to change the settings, you know, particularly when you're in the car, you know, big buttons on the screen, but also kind of a tidying up of things like the toolbar. And this very much sort of brings to mind the kind of patterns we're seeing in some of Nokia's future UIs. And that's both in Symbian Anna with the kind of the toolbar, also Symbian Belle, to a certain extent, I would say Hartmaten as well, and probably what we'll see in Series 40 in due course, certainly in the sort of touch and type Series 40, and in the Maps version for Series 40, we're seeing sort of similar design language, if you will. And in that sense, actually, I think Maps is, you know, something that Nokia can hold up as an example where they have put a lot of effort into the UX, which is kind of combining the user interface and the general experience of using it. And I actually think Ovi Maps, I mean, it's not perfect by any means. And one of the problems is, with any navigation tool like this, there's a very diverse range of users and use cases, and so it's impossible to suit everybody. But I do think it's pretty sophisticated, and for me, Ovi Maps is pretty easy to use. And so you can actually hand it to someone else who's not familiar with a Nokia phone when you're in a car with them or something like that, and generally they are able to use it, you know, get where they need to go, put in the search and things like that. And, you know, that's, I think that's high praise for a mobile application. That's not very often you can say that about things with the sophistication of, you know, this service. You know, we're not talking a simple application here. You know, it's advanced and has a lot of features.
Yeah, yeah. And we must get used to calling it Nokia Maps for mobile now.
And frankly, I'm glad to see that, because that's where it came from. That's where it's going back to.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know it came from Smart to Go, but let's not go.
Yes, that's true. Thank you, Steve.
You can get this from Nokia Beta Labs, so just Google that, you'll find it. And if you sign in, you can then download it's about a 10 megabyte download, and it works on all the current Symbian 3 phones. But I'm sure, yes, as Rave said, it will roll out to a wider selection of devices. Certainly something like the 70, £80 S65th edition devices, if they end up getting Ovi Maps 3.8, that's just stonkingly good value. But let's move on. We both have in our hands a brand new Symbian Anna smartphone. This is the Nokia E6. Rafe's got the white one. I've got the black one. I have to say, Rafe, mine's prettier than yours.
Yes, I think I'm probably inclined to agree with you. I mean, I do quite like the white one, and I have liked some of Nokia's white phones, but I mean, talking to various Nokia product managers over the years, I think the white devices do tend to appeal to the female demographic more than men, who tend to go for the black devices because they're seen as, you know, more in keeping. So, you know, part of me wants to, you know, immediately rush out this weekend and spray paint the white one black. But I'm actually very happy to be using this device. One of the things I've had to be careful for when doing this review is trying to avoid being too over the top and excited about it, because I mean, I was a E71 and E72 user for a long time, and that certainly affects your view of a device, you know, your kind of past history. But I do think this offers a really quite powerful and compelling device in a form factor that's, you know, moves away from the hegemony we've had with the kind of touchscreen slabs. I don't know what your reaction has been. I know, Steve, you've been more of a fan of the bigger touchscreen devices in some ways than I have. What was your take on the E6 over the last few days?
Well, I really do like hardware QWERTY, which is why I like the Nokia E7, and I really wanted to love the E6, and in a sense I do, in that it's a gorgeously made device. It looks superb. It feels superb in the hands. The battery lasts for days. Everything just works in it. Apart from the fact that the certain emphasis, which is where I guess where the big large touchscreens come in, which is web browsing, video watching, photographic editing, doing stuff with multimedia generally, things that I actually am quite interested in. Those are the core of my experience, the core of my expertise. They're actually very difficult to do on the E6, not because it can't do them, but because the sheer physical form factor and screen size means that it's very fiddly to do them. And indeed, some things, video watching, for a good example, if most videos these days are widescreen, so you're watching a video on the E6's landscape display, but you've got a 2.4-inch screen with black bars top and bottom. The actual diagonal you're watching is around 2 inches to 2.1 inches, which means we're back in, I don't know, is that N70 days, 2006, where we were watching videos on our phones back then. So it really is not optimized for that. There's an email coming on the E6 as I talk chime. It's not optimized for multimedia. It's not optimized for entertainment. It's rubbish for games, etc., etc. But it is absolutely stonkingly brilliant for a device that will just go and go and go, last a lifetime, and be receiving emails and text messages and organizing your life day after day. So it gets a very strong thumbs up from me, but within that one sort of niche, within that one big caveat.
Yeah, I think the critical thing about the E6 is if you're looking at buying it, you need to ask yourself whether you're happy with the inherent kind of compromises of this form factor. Yes, it's great to have a QWERTY keyboard and a touchscreen as well, and to my mind, you get much of the benefit of both worlds. But as Steve said, you get the smaller screen, and that does have important implications for everything else. Now, I don't think that's something you can actually fault the device for. It's just the very nature of the device itself. And I agree with Steve, you know, the hardware in particular on this, there's very little to fault. I mean, people will talk about the EDOF camera, and we've kind of had plenty of discussions about that, so we won't revisit that too much. But yes, macro mode is a problem, and if you're used to doing business card or document scanning, that's something that's not really going to be possible on the E6, certainly not in the same way, or accuracy for OCR. Fine for, you know, grabbing a quick reminder, but not more than that. But, you know, on the other side, you know, the E6 camera actually shoots better video and arguably better still photos amongst many people, especially because you don't have the fiddly press T to autofocus that you did on the earlier devices.
Yeah, there's some of the sample photos in our E6 review part 4, which will be up by the time you listen to this. That includes a shot of yours, of your cat moving through the jungle, and one of a goose sneezing, or at least seemed to be. In each case, yeah, there's no way on earth you get either of those with an autofocus camera, because by the time you'd focus, the animal would have gone, or in some, I guess, people's cases, their friend would have moved or smiled, or their child would have dashed off. These EDOF cameras are actually brilliant for capturing the moment, and the E6 is as good as the others.
Yeah, I agree. That kind of instant capture moment, and also the not having the fiddle of autofocus. I see people picking up the autofocus cameras and sometimes just not getting it right, and as a result, not getting good performance. All that said, I mean, if you're someone who's used to using an autofocus camera, you know, you come from something like the N82 or the N8, yes, of course, EDOF is a step back, but that's sort of implied whenever we talk about it. So, yes, we won't dwell on that. But yes, as I say, the hardware in particular, you know, does blow me away. Because the E72, I mean, I don't know what you thought, Steve, but that was actually slightly, for me, a step back from the E71 in terms of the robustness. And the E6 is kind of a return to form for this form factor. I mean, certainly in the time I've had it, you know, no problems whatsoever. And, you know, solid battery cover, for example.
Yes, absolutely. It's very, very well made. And as you say, it absolutely reminds you of the E71, in that it would actually be quite hard to take to bits. One feature of the E72, which I kind of took advantage to change my keypad, I did a feature on the site about it, was that it's very easy to get into the E72. You undo a few couple of torque screws and, hey presto, half the phone's falling to bits, which doesn't actually say that much for its robustness and and solid form factor, whereas the E71 I actually couldn't get into fully, and I suspect the same might be true of this, and that speaks well of it, the fact that it feels solid, it feels like you could drop it, you could really subject it to a fair amount of abuse, and it wouldn't start rattling or creaking.
Yeah, and you mentioned the battery life briefly there. I think this really is worth emphasising, because this is something relatively unusual on a smartphone, you know, in today's market, where I think now kind of got used to charging our devices every day. And there are times when you think, oh no, I can't do that because the battery won't quite last a day. You know, you're watching a video on the way back on the tube or something like that. And you suddenly go, no, I need to, you know, just preserve that battery life a bit more. I think one thing you can see about the E6 is you won't ever have that problem. And it will certainly last a day, even under heavy usage conditions. And I've been finding, typically, that I've been sort of charging it sometime on the third day, which is pretty much unprecedented for a smartphone, I think. Now, there are some others that perform well. I mean, actually, some of the Symbian devices are pretty good in that department, especially when you compare them to the Android devices. The Android devices are improving. I think the Samsung Galaxy S2, Steve, you've been using that. And the battery life on that's not bad, is it?
It's not bad, and it's a fairly large battery, as Android phones go as well, but it still gets through it in basically the day. You can last the day fairly comfortably, but you're not going to go much beyond. The killer feature about these, and people complain, they say, oh, well, why do you need a battery that lasts more than a day? Surely everyone's going to charge it each night, but the thing is, you don't. You don't always remember. You say you're out late at night, you come in, you've had a couple of beers, and you forget. The next day, you're starting your phone life with one bar or two bars of battery, and it runs out by 11 a.m. If you've got a Nokia E6, for example, you can go out and forget, or there can be a problem or a power cut, all sorts of problems, and the next day, you'll start the day with four or five bars, and you'll still be going strong at the end of the second day. When the E71 came out, I did some testing, and I joked to the product manager. I said, look, this is probably the first smartphone for a while that you can get through an entire week on one charge if you're careful. And he said, yes, he'd actually had that experience happen to him. And I don't think you'd quite get a week on the E6, but you could probably go 3 or 4 days if you were fairly modest with your consumption.
Yeah, no, I think so. I mean, in terms of the specifications, the E6 has actually got superior stats to the E71 and the E72. A lot of that's to do with kind of the energy conservation features in Symbian 3. It's kind of less power hungry, but I suspect that is offset by screen size and some of the other bits and pieces. But, you know, although we're going on about the battery life here, I really do think it's something that's worth pointing out and really emphasizing, because it is a great feature. And so, for example, for me, what it means is you can actually go away overnight and not have to take a charger with you, or you don't have to take a charger into work or worry about that kind of thing. And that, you know, that's a real benefit. And of course, as Steve said, you can actually take out the battery. It's a standard BP4L battery, 1500 mAh, and you can replace it. So theoretically, at least, you could quite comfortably go on holiday for a week, take a spare battery with you. And if you're not using it sort of intensively, it will do fine for an entire week. And there's, I don't think, any other smartphone I can think of so in the kind of last year or so that you can say that about. So, you know, I do think that gets a big thumbs up from me. And personally, battery life is one of my bugbears. And yes, I like having a thin device, but for me, it's gone too far the other way. And there is a point of view that says, yeah, it just lasts a day. But I think there's the point of view that says make it last as long as possible. That should also be appreciated. And certainly, I suppose it fits in with kind of the E6 target market, you know, professional power users who want to keep on the go, road warriors. You know, it is a natural fit, but it is one of the real benefits of the E6.
Yeah, yeah. Let's move on from the E6. You can read all four parts of our extensive, and I mean extensive, it's over 15,000 words E6 review on allaboutsymbian.com, of course, and comments are welcome. One item of news, Nokia has released Cute Quick Components 1, but it doesn't sound very, very exciting, Rafe, but it does mean that the whole Cute tool chain is now complete. Is it possible to summarise that for our regular listeners?
Yes, I mean, this is the idea that when you create an application, it's actually made up of little bits of UI, you know, like a button or a menu or a scroll bar. And previously in Qt, developers had to create those themselves. With this, they've now got a kind of, if you like, a library or of these little components that they can use in their applications. So that obviously makes development more, you know, faster, but it also makes it easier in that they don't have to go away and design it themselves. But for the consumer, it makes things, you know, more standard. So you're likely to see the Qt applications, and this is all done in QML or Qt Quick. They're likely to be, you know, have a similar look and feel across the range. And I would have thought it would actually mean there'll be a few more applications as well, just because it's easier to develop something. And as you say, it kind of completes the tool chain for Qt. And previously, you know, developers would have been using Symbian C++ and the Avcon widget set, and they've now got a cute, quick widget set ready to go. So it's, you know, very good news indeed, because I think it kind of completes that cute story, which we've been talking about now for, I guess, getting on for 2 years with regard to Symbian. And, you know, Nokia last November talked about it becoming the primary development platform, with the release earlier this year of Qt Quick. It sort of kind of got a bit more mature, and now it's complete. And the other thing to note with this is that the same kind of technology, these Qt Quick components, are actually going to be used on Hartmatten, which is the Nokia N9. And I think presumably it's a safe bet to say so in the future, the application for the next 1 billion users, which is sort of Series 40 and Qt being used there. And so for developers, it's actually a technology that's well worth investigating. People are saying, why would I bother looking at Qt, because Symbian's been given a shelf life? Well, aside from the fact there's a lot of Symbian devices out there, Qt is going to have wider use. Hartmatten Amigo is one example of that. Series 40 is perhaps an even better example in terms of numbers. And I think we may see it picked up on other platforms as well. And there's been talk of it on things like WebOS, but I also think on the desktop with KDE and other areas like that, it's going to be well worth keeping an eye on. But purely for Symbian users, it's going to mean some nice looking applications with a kind of a UI that fits in with the rest of the system. And one of the interesting elements of this is actually they're designing it to fit in with the next version of Symbian, which is called Symbian Belle. That's not been formally announced yet by Nokia, so there's not an awful lot we can say about it. But what we can say is it does include a fairly major revision of the UI. In some ways, the biggest revision of the Symbian UI that we've ever seen. Certainly, it's as bigger than the change from Symbian to Symbian Anna. And, you know, aside from the fact it's not adding touch, it's bigger than going from S63rd edition to S65th edition. It's kind of introducing a smaller status bar, drop-down notifications, getting rid of the options menu and other things. We're going to have a feature on the site on it, so you can check it out there. But in general, this is kind of the first piece of that story, and we're going to be talking about that a lot in the future.
Just moving on, all of the pre-Symbian 3 smartphones have now got an OviStore performance update. So that's most of the devices running S63rd edition and 5th edition. There's now a new version of OviStore client 1.12, and no major change log, but it definitely seems snappier. Now, I don't know whether this is my imagination, Rafe, but I tried this on the N97, I tried it on the N86, and in each case it seemed, well, almost on a par performance-wise with some of the Symbian 3 phones. Was it faster for you?
Yes, it was faster for me. I'm having difficulty picking out the difference, though, whether this is down to the actual update for the OviStore or whether it's an update to the underlying web browser technology, because as we talked about last week, there's actually an update to 7.3 for the browser, the same that's coming with Symbian Anna, and that actually means an update to the kind of underlying rendering engine, which, of course, is used by Web Runtime, which OviStore is built on top of. So I think for some of the devices I've been trying it on, like the N97 Mini, for example, that could be some of the performance improvement I'm seeing. But the fact you're seeing it on the N86 and the N95, which of course aren't having that update, does suggest to me that there probably is a real performance improvement. And that's a good thing, because any way that makes it quicker to get the third-party applications onto your device is going to be a good thing.
Yeah. And a reminder that Nokia has been updating a good number of their S63rd edition Feature Pack 2 and 5th edition devices to the new firmware, adding in the new version of Maps, and also, what else was in
it? It was also the emoticons, and that's in most cases an updated version of Nokia email as well. A specific device that I know have been added this week is the N97 Mini, but I think the X6 has also been updated. We'll be checking on that in due course, and that's in addition to the existing ones that had already got it, which were the C6, the 5230, the E5, the E72, and the E52. And there's more to come.
Yeah, absolutely. So do check your device on the Nokia software update. Just try over-the-air update through Device Manager, which is *#0000#. On your dialer and check for updates, so do check that. We're keeping this short. There's only the two of us here. Next week we will have David Gilton and Ewan Spence on with us. In the meantime, thank you very much for listening. I've been Steve Litchfield. You can catch me on Twitter at Steve Litchfield. And do you want to say goodbye, Rafe?
Yes, you can. I'm Rafe Blanford. You can catch me on Twitter at Rafe Blanford. Don't forget, you can also follow the site at AAS and also on Facebook at facebook.com/allaboutsymbian.
Thanks for listening to the All About Symbian Insight.